The COVID-19 pandemic intersects every aspect of global public health. Today, there are more than 43 million confirmed cases and more than 1 million deaths across 198 countries attributed to COVID-19. As the number of cases and deaths continue to rise, there is an increasingly urgent need for a vaccine. I'm Sarah Barnes, and you're listening to Friday Podcast, hosted by the Wilson Center's Environmental Change and Security Program and Maternal Health Initiative. In today's episode, we bring you highlights from our recent event, Rolling Out a Vaccine for COVID-19, Present Prospects, and Lessons from the Past, where panelists discuss issues of vaccine hesitancy in the United States and the importance of trust and leadership. This episode of Friday Podcast was made possible through the generous support of March of Dimes, the University of Pittsburgh, and the Jonas Salk Legacy Foundation. The first speaker in today's podcast is Dr. Rahul Gupta. Dr. Gupta is the Senior Vice President and Chief Medical and Health Officer at the March of Dimes. He is a practicing internist with 25 years of clinical experience who also serves as faculty at Georgetown University of Medicine, West Virginia University School of Public Health, and the Harvard University T.H. Chan School of Public Health. He was also a state public health commissioner in West Virginia, and in 1994, he helped launch the first polio vaccine campaign in New Delhi, India, where they vaccinated over 2 million children in one day. Second is Dr. Lisa Waddell. Dr. Waddell is the Chief Medical Officer for the CDC Foundation, where she manages COVID-19 response efforts, including directing the foundation's team of senior advisors providing support to the public health systems across the nation. She also helps direct the COVID-19 core surge staff hired to provide direct support in health departments across 64 state, territorial, local, and tribal jurisdictions nationwide. The third speaker in today's podcast is Dr. Paul Dupre. Dr. Dupre is the Jonas Salk Chair for Vaccine Research at the University of Pittsburgh and leads Pitt's Center for Vaccine Research. He directs Pitt's Regional Biocontainment Laboratory, which is a high security facility embedded in the Center for Vaccine Research that allows scientists to safely contain and examine potentially dangerous pathogens. Currently, he and his team are in the process of researching and developing a COVID-19 vaccine. And the fourth speaker is Dr. Ruth Caron. Dr. Caron is a professor of international health in the Bloomberg School of Public Health, with a joint appointment in the Department of Pediatrics in the School of Medicine at the Johns Hopkins University. She is a pediatric infectious diseases physician, virologist, and vaccinologist, and is director of the Center for Immunization Research and the Johns Hopkins Vaccine Initiative. She's also played an important role in committees that advise the FDA and CDC on vaccine approvals. Our moderator for this event was Chris Adams. Chris is the Director of Training and Content at the National Press Foundation, where he runs fellowship programs for working journalists. He is also an adjunct professor of journalism at American University.
So right now we're talking about a race to a vaccine and the plans to deploy it, but what if few people take it? There was a Wall Street Journal NBC poll that was just put out yesterday. They said only 70% of registered voters said they would take one, and most of those said they would wait for a while. Only 20% of respondents said they would be first in line to take a vaccine. Other polls have shown even more resistance, sometimes down to the 50 or 55% mark of people who are willing to take the vaccine. So I'd like each of you to talk to me about vaccine hesitancy. Is there any way around the hesitancy that we know is out there that it seems to be growing as opposed to receding? So we'll start with you, Rahul.
Thank you, Chris. Vaccine hesitancy is to be expected in a normal circumstances. It's very different from being what we call quote unquote anti-vaccine. It is normal for average citizens and residents to be questioning the vaccine before they take into their bodies. That's where the transparency of the manufacturing process, the regulatory process, and building trust in that system is so critical and important. It is not wrong at all to be hesitant. What is important is to demand that we have a safe and effective vaccine. We also need to understand that it is these days in the polarized and divided world, it's very easy, whether we see it with masks, with social distancing, other aspects, to view vaccines from a political lens. So it's very important that we understand that, that vaccines are some of the most investigated, documented safety countermeasures and drugs out there of anything. We do also have a very safe, advanced mechanism to capture safety side of this. But I will be really clear. When Dr. Salk and Dr. Francis conducted a trial back in 1954 and 1955 with the vaccine, there were 1.8 million participants to the vaccine. We have thousands, in some places, tens of thousands of participants in each of these clinical trials enrolled. So there is no doubt in my mind that when we take and extrapolate the results from thousands or tens of thousands to hundreds of millions and sometimes billions of people, some side effects will come out. We saw that with the H1N1 vaccine, which may not have been previously documented. That is not a reason to doubt the safety and efficacy of vaccine. That's a reason to have a robust process to be able to discover that, make the appropriate changes. And to do that, what we need is a trust of people in the systems of manufacturing. And then we need policymakers and other officials not to politicize this process and to trust in science and trust in evidence in order to have success.
Okay, I wanna pick up on that and go back to Lisa for more on trust. Lisa, say that everybody in the federal, state, and local governments got on the same page about the development, the approval of, and the need to take the vaccine. Would the public come around? Would we see those numbers go up, or people, is it like so many other issues right now, people are kind of stuck in their viewpoints?
Thank you, Chris. So leadership matters. Leadership matters, and it's important to model the way. And so similar with masks, we've seen that with mask requirements that people tend to follow that. And when they see their leadership doing that, then people tend to follow. And so if we go into schools and the teachers are wearing their masks, their students are going to generally wear their mask. If you go into your other kinds of institutions and everyone are wearing masks, and then others are going to wear their designer, fancy football types of masks. So leadership matters. And so if we have a consistency in messaging around the vaccine and everyone is actually sharing that message, then yes, it's going to build trust. But it still makes, it's important that we communicate early. We communicate often, we repeat those messages, and that they are delivered in a lot of different ways because people receive information in different ways. And then ultimately, it still matters about who the messenger is. So the messenger needs to be from individuals in the communities where people live, that they tend to listen to them as respected leaders. And so that's why it's so important to partner with many others in communities, particularly providers. Healthcare providers will be really important early on, that they believe in the vaccine, they understand, they are communicating as trusted, respected leaders in their communities. And then over time, we will see improvements, I believe.
Okay, so I'd like to hear, Paul, what thoughts do you have on vaccine hesitancy, either how it's built or what can be done to mitigate it?
So I think it's important to reiterate that point that it is understandable and it is not wrong to be hesitant. It is good to ask questions and it is good important to have trusted messengers in front of you who can answer the questions, who can relate, who can communicate. And that's why communication, collaboration, transparency, partnerships, right from the beginning of vaccine development through these faces that you see in front of you now, a group of individuals that span from molecule right to the person, the man, the woman who will get the vaccine. So firstly, I think it's important to consider that. Secondly, it's important to remember that we need to champion these products. We need to show what they have done in the past. That's why I think it's wonderful to have discussed poliovirus today, pushed to the edge of eradication by safe, efficacious vaccines. I have worked with measles for the entirety of my professional life. And I have seen in the United Kingdom, when unsubstantiated, unfounded associations between measles and autism, measles and Crohn's, measles and this plethora of different unsubstantiated associations, I have seen the vaccine uptake reduced from 95% to 74%. And again, I started this conversation talking about the basic science. I'm a virologist. And the sad part of that is there are viruses in my freezers that have made their way to the University of Pittsburgh from Belfast to Boston, from Boston to Pittsburgh, that come from the brain of a small child who was not vaccinated for measles. So as Lisa personalized what happens whenever you meet a virus, as I have personalized a virus in a freezer, which came from a person who is no longer with us, I think we have to remember not to forget, what these diseases did in the past, and to actively collaborate, to work with each other, and to communicate well that vaccines work.
Okay, and I just want to hear from Ruth on the same topic. What can be done to mitigate the hesitancy of this out there? And I was also hoping you could talk about the role of the advisory panel, such as VRBPAC and ACIP at the CDC. Give us a little more sense of what those bodies do, and is their presence something that could help convince the public of the ultimate safety, I guess, of the vaccine?
Yeah. So thank you, Chris. So first of all, I just want to say that I completely agree with everything that my distinguished panelists have said with respect to vaccine hesitancy. One additional point that I wanted to make about it, because I think I'm essentially an optimist at heart, is that I would say that we have before us a national and a global teachable moment when it comes to vaccines that could stand us in good stead, not only for COVID-19 vaccines, but for vaccines in general, vaccine uptake and diminishing vaccine hesitancy. Because we develop, regulate, and deploy vaccines many times over, but we don't generally do it on center stage. And so this is a time when we can really educate the public. And I think that if we do this right, we could not only increase confidence in COVID-19 vaccines, but increase confidence in all of the vaccines that we deploy. So as for the role of VRBPAC and ACIP, maybe I can just start out to clarify that both of these are advisory committees. They don't make policy, they advise government agencies on policy. So VRBPAC advises the FDA on vaccine licensure and will, in this case, in the case of COVID-19, if a vaccine comes for emergency use authorization, the recent guidance from the FDA has indicated that VRBPAC will also advise at the FDA on emergency use authorization. ACIP advises the CDC on vaccine use. How should the vaccines be deployed in the case of COVID-19 vaccines? Perhaps which group should be prioritized? These advisory committees, both of them, are made up of independent experts. They are often people like me from an academic setting. They can be also from a public health setting. and they are vetted to be free of conflicts of interest. These are people who, at least in my case, think of it as real public service. They do this because they want to contribute. And I think that their involvement should really increase confidence by the public that these agencies, which themselves are staffed with really dedicated, committed, expert professionals, are also being advised by this independent group of experts.
Okay, so thank you very much. Let me just ask one final question that deals with hesitancy issues. Does anybody have a sense of the people who are hesitant out there? How many of them are just kind of hesitant or scared versus those who are, you know, hardcore anti-vaxxers who won't want to take a vaccine, you know, in any circumstances? I mean, do we know of the hesitant, what percentage are persuadable and what percentage aren't?
Here's the way I would respond to that. In my role as state health commissioner, we have the same, there was an appearance of that there was a lot of people who weren't going to take the vaccine for all kinds of reasons. And when we put in a process in place, actually, to understand that, we didn't see a lot of people who are by core just anti-vaccine. We saw a lot of people who were more hesitant. And it turns out that obviously, if you are at the core just anti any vaccine, then you would want your appearance, especially if it's not a large appearance, to look large. You look like a movement. But we need to speak for majority of Americans. And majority of Americans both have a right to know the process, right to know and understand from a regulatory manufacturing sense, but also learn more about this particular and other vaccines, because we know the why we have some decline in vaccine. Generally speaking, Americans do take up childhood vaccination for a number of vaccine preventable diseases. We also know, though, that the populations who are suffering the most right now from COVID, meaning as Lisa mentioned, higher proportion of hospitalization and deaths, African-Americans, the Latinx population, are also the population who are expressing the most concern about the vaccine. And we have to be really careful and understand both from a communication standpoint, but also understand, as Lisa mentioned, we need to get to have trusted messengers. First, the message has to be trustworthy, and then messengers have to be trusting in order to understand, because we've had some sordid past history in this nation of having intervention done in populations. And the last point I'll make very quickly is this. Make no mistake about it. We have not succeeded, whether it's the mask wearing, whether it's the social distancing and other precautions. So if we continue the same path by having have the experts say one thing and politicians say just the opposite, and our leaders not really adhere to any principles, we're going to end up in the same category that we are now. No vaccine can immunize us against the disease if we continue on the same path. I don't want us for a minute to think that we're on the right path and we just need to make adjustments. We have to make some major changes to the way we are approaching this pandemic in our nation.
Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to this edition of Friday Podcast. And thank you to our panelists and to the March of Dimes, the University of Pittsburgh, and the Jonas Salk Legacy Foundation for your support and partnership. To learn more about the COVID-19 vaccine development and distribution process, and to view this event in its entirety, visit the .mom column on newsecuritybeat.org or follow us on Twitter at @Wilson_MHI. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe to Friday Podcasts wherever you listen to podcasts.